For our interview this week, Talking History's Terry Clark and his guest Mariana Tax-Cholden examine changes in censorship in the new Russia.
In the view of some, the Soviet Union was a totalitarian state. Others argue that it was far less monolithic, marked instead by a vast array of powerful bureaucratic agencies in competition with each other. Regardless of the model one uses to understand the Soviet Union, most agree that the regime severely restricted the information available to its citizens. This was particularly the case concerning such sensitive topics as religion and sex. But what of the new Russia? How has Russia dealt with information on these topics? Here to discuss the issue of censorship in the new Russia is Professor Mariana Tax-Cholden. Professor Cholden is the C. Walter and Gerda B. Mortensen Distinguished Professor at the Library of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She is also a past president of the American Association for the Advancement of Slavic Studies and a recipient of the Pushkin Gold Medal for contributions to culture awarded her by the Russian government. She is best known for her books, A Fence Around the Empire, Russian Censorship of Western Ideas Under the Tsars, and The Red Pencil, Artists, Scholars, and Censors in the USSR. Welcome to our show, Professor Cholden.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you.
You know, most of us, at least in my generation, and I'm sure yours as well, and most of our listeners, grew up with this image of a tightly censored Soviet Union or tight censorship. And that was particularly the case regarding such sensitive issues as sex, drugs, religion. Just how tight was Soviet censorship of these topics and others like them?
Well, it was extremely tight. It's hard for us here to even imagine how tight it was. That isn't to say that it was perfect, because no censorship is perfect, but it came as close as any system probably could, particularly during certain parts of the Soviet era. Under Stalin, for example, it reached extraordinary levels. But it was very, very tight indeed. All information flow was controlled from the top. It was a system that is, in my understanding of things, unique in the world in that it's unlike any other censorship system that we think of when we think of censorship, in that it was completely unacknowledged publicly by the government, in fact, indeed, denied by the government, and yet it existed as such a far-reaching, deep, comprehensive system of control over information that, in effect, everybody became a censor and everybody was subject to censorship. It was quite an extraordinary system.
This had, as I'm hearing you describe this, this had to have a serious impact on science, did it not?
Very serious impact on all kinds of science. Dramatic cases of that people, many people have heard of course, are under Stalin when biology, the science of biology, for example, was pretty much completely destroyed by the introduction, the forced acceptance of the biology of a Soviet scientist named Lysenko, and the complete rejection of modern genetics as it was practiced set back Soviet biology by generations. That's an extreme example, but in fact, science overall was affected by the extreme secrecy, by the inability of scientists to communicate across sort of horizontally with each other, and by many other factors. It had a very, very crippling effect on science and on social science. The study of society and of the human mind, so sociology, psychology, and disciplines like that, were extremely distorted because the only acceptable way of thinking about society and about human behavior was in strictly Marxist terms, as they were defined in the Soviet philosophy. So lots of science was crippled.
I was surprised as I was listening to your answers to my first question as well, when you were saying that, of course, it was much a tighter censorship under Stalin, but throughout it was tight. What about eras, though, like the thaw that we've heard about under Khrushchev, where there was supposed to be greater access, at least in literature?
Yeah, well, the thaw was indeed a thaw. It was indeed a thaw, but remember what a thaw is if we want to look figuratively out of our windows, those of us who are living in areas covered by snow right now. A thaw just means it's a little bit warmer, and there's a little dripping and a little melting and a little bit of slush. It's not as though it were a complete sudden meltdown. And so while it, in contrast to what was before, it was a dramatic change, it didn't immediately affect the situation to make everything dramatically better. A lot of important things happened during those 10 years of thaw. A generation came of age that had a different way of thinking about things, and that became extremely important later on when things really did change. The Gorbachev generation came of age then, and during that period or shortly after it, during it and shortly after it, you had great events that began to shake the Soviet state, although it was much too early to see what effect they were going to have. You had the Hungarian uprising, then later you had the Prague Spring, and the people who came of age in that thaw period began to look differently at a lot of the things that were going on around them. And I'm sure it's not only I, but many specialists agree that it's the events of that era that began to really form the momentum that was going to be able to make cracks in the system.
How did the collapse of the Soviet Union, has it changed this situation or this as you've described it to us?
Oh, dramatically. Now we can use the word dramatically, and in fact, when you look back over what is a mere decade, just 10 years, it's hard to recognize the old place, because things in this area have changed so enormously and so deeply. But there is still a mentality problem, and this is something that I think we all need to be aware of. We know it from our own experience as well, that you can change a lot of physical things, and you can change the way things, you can change the technology, and you can change the mechanics of how things work, but the hardest thing of all to change is the human mind and the habits that we were born and bred with, and those die. Those changes are harder to affect. And so, yes, it's changed a lot, and yes, there's still a way to go.
What about now? What are the big issues or the hot issues when it comes to information access?
Well, certainly issues of secrecy and national security still remain high in the minds of the authorities, and that's not surprising. They're high in the minds of the authorities in every country. We know that in our own country as well. But recent examples... for example, the secrecy that they tried to impose over the accident, the Kursk, the tragedy of the submarine, the recent court case, although it had a happy ending, but there was a long and drawn-out court case about an environmental scientist who was trying to reveal some of the environmental disasters in the Soviet Union. These harken back to the old days, and they are kind of concern that's still present now. And you know, as I said, I don't think we can expect any society, any country, to be free of those kinds of concerns on the part of the government. But what we need to expect, what you hope for, is a system operating in the country that will counter that kind of pressure that comes from the government, and that isn't really in place yet. So that's an issue that's on people's minds. Other areas that are sensitive. Again, they're not too surprising. Many of these same words are going to pop up in other countries. Religion, hate and violence, sex and pornography. These are issues that tend to be hot button issues in lots of countries, and they certainly are in post-Soviet Russia as well.
Interesting set of topics.
How
are the Russians dealing with information about sex?
Well, they're really not dealing with it. It's really for much of the past decade, sex has really come out of the closet there. I guess what one has to remember is that something that I didn't mention about the Soviet system is that it was an extraordinarily prudish and Victorian society when it came to control of literature and film and other things having that would portray in any way sexuality. So publications were scanned very carefully for any four-letter words or any kind of improper language. Films were scanned very carefully before they were released for anything that might be seen as being too prurient. It was a very Victorian approach to things. So once the controls were lifted, anything goes. And there isn't yet the kind of, for example, the sort of zoning that we have in American cities where you can have your adult bookstores and your sex shops and so on, but they're in certain areas. They have very strict regulation in terms of what can be displayed in the windows. There are age limits about who can enter such a place and who can be sold such material and so on. So there's some attempt by local society communities to keep that kind of material controlled in some way. One may or may not agree with this, but this is kind of the way it is. Well, that isn't present at all yet in Russia. I suspect it will come. So people, on the one hand, you can buy hardcore pornography just about anywhere, and as a reaction to that, I suppose people are quite outraged about it. So it's still at a stage. I always tell my Russian friends, just keep working at this and have patience. It will fall into place. People lose their enormous fascination with something that they can get more freely to, and what you're seeing partly is a reaction to years of being kept from such things. That's a natural reaction.
You mentioned religion is another one of the hot button issues.
Yeah.
And that can be a really touchy one if it's mixed with what issues of race or ethnicity.
Oh, yes. And this is truly a hot button in Russia, because one of the nasty things, of course, that crawled out from under the rocks when the Soviet state fell apart was nationalism and ethnic hatreds and race issues that had been present, of course, always, because they're present in any human society, unfortunately. But under the Soviet government, they were firmly held down. And now that that control is no longer there, we see all those things popping up. So, of course, the most obvious thing is the war in Chechnya and the neighboring areas in the Caucasus, the Northern Caucasus, and that region. But in fact, you see a lot of tension throughout the society. And so in Moscow, for example, you have what we would consider unlawful search and seizure of dark-skinned people who are seen as coming up from the south, from the Caucasus, and maybe being dangerous, and then the police will apprehend them and try to control their movements and search them and so on. And these are things that we hope don't happen in an orderly society. In terms of religion, again, you've got much more religious free expression than could ever have been dreamed of under the Soviet Union. All religion, of course, was seen as a bad thing in Marxism. It's the opiate of the people and so on, and you weren't supposed to have it. But Russians have always held on very strongly to the dominant religion, Russian Orthodoxy. But in addition, there are in the former Soviet Union a number of other religions that are important. There's a strong Jewish presence. There's a very strong Muslim presence. And there have been since long before the Russian Revolution, there have been strong but small groups of Protestants within the territory of what's now Russia. And after the fall of the Soviet Union, all of this began to bloom in some very good ways, but also some bad things started to happen. The Russian Orthodox Church, some elements of the church, I hasten to say that this is not all of the churchmen. I know some extremely liberal moderate church people within the Russian Orthodox Church, but some took a very hardline position toward other religions. Now we're free, now we can practice religion, now we're going to have the Russian Orthodox Church in its old glory as it was before the revolution. And so there have been a lot of attempts on the part of the Russian Orthodox Church to sort of censor the activities and publications and access and so on of other religions within Christianity, let alone Judaism, Islam, and so on. There has been a resurgence of anti-Semitism. There was anti-Semitism all along in the Russian Empire. There was anti-Semitism coming directly from the state, often, during the Soviet time. Now you're seeing again, and have seen since the fall of the Soviet Union, a resurgence of kind of more private kinds of anti-Semitism being expressed publicly. Rise of neo-Nazi types, as you see in other parts of Europe. This is all the kind of thing that goes along with openness, and it's the kind of thing that that is very upsetting, both to, you know, to a government and to the population, but it's something that a democracy has to learn how to deal with, and the Russians are struggling with it.
It's been a very interesting conversation. I actually wish we had more time.
I do, too.
Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Professor Mariana Tax-Cholden. She's the C. Walter and Gerda B. Mortensen Distinguished Professor at the Library of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.